Hey everybody, we're back. It's funny, if you listen to this back to back, it seems like instant, but I've covered some ground since the last time we talked. But I'm also back in the car going down the same road, the opposite direction. So it's kind of a weird, it is like we're in the same place again, but not. It's like that, but not. Well, I'm back from trip number two to Portland for a workshop. So, four flights down, 20 to go. So, you know, after the next flight out next week on Monday, I'll be less than 20. Isn't that fucking crazy? It's really crazy. It's a weird thing, like, to think about, because I was thinking about writing this column, right, about how to sort of, be a writer if you're spending a lot of your time traveling. Like, what are some traveling tips I got for some folks who are trying to get some shit accomplished? And, you know, one of the things I would say is, like, don't complain about traveling a lot. Not because there's nothing to complain about. There's lots to complain about. I mean, I think everyone thinks, like, don't complain about traveling a lot because it's great. You know, it's fun. It's like, whatever. And it's like, yeah, I don't think most people realize that most of the time when you travel, it's for vacation. This is, like, not at all vacation. I mean, it's not vacation-y. It's, imagine traveling for a class. I mean, because that's what it is. Now, it's a class you really want to take. It's a great class, and it's working out, and everything about it is good. But, you know, you're traveling. Imagine traveling to work at a job you really like one day a week. And that's kind of, you know, with people you like and all that. But that's kind of what we're talking about. So you're not, like, eating at fun restaurants all the time. You're not, you know, having a beer in the airport at 8 a.m. Because you're like, if I do that, I'll be broke as shit. So, like, you can't really complain about it, not because there's nothing to complain about, but because no one wants to hear it. Like, everyone, if you're on a plane twice a week, everyone's like, well, your life is great. And you're like, I don't know, man. Living on this side of it for 2 weeks, I'm like, this isn't great. I understand now why people are like, I get so fucking burned, like, I don't know, when bands are on tour, like, comedians or whoever, and they're just like, you go from place to place and whatever, because, like, I gotta imagine when you're a band or something on tour, you go to, like, all these great places, but you see the highway at night and super early in the morning, you see a hotel room, you walk across the street to the closest fucking place to eat, which is almost certainly some kind of place you've eaten 100 times, you see a concert venue, and then that's it, right? I mean, you're probably not, I don't think when most bands tour, it's like, oh, okay, well, we're here for like 8 days, so we party around, hang out in, you know, New York for 8 days. It's like, New York and Tulsa, Oklahoma are basically the same, because, you know, I'm just looking out onto a crowd while bright lights shine in my eyes. So the difference here is pretty, the general shape of a stage, I guess, is the biggest difference. You got really Bob Seger in it, huh? But anyway, that was my first piece of advice, which I'm going to totally ignore because, I don't know, fuck off. Like, it's good that I have this opportunity, but it's like, I saved a lot of money and it fucking worked out really well that Poonmaster Flex lives out there, so I can do this. Because otherwise, when I was applying for this last year, I was pretty much planning to sleep in the airport. I was like, okay, I think what I could do is fly out, like, on a, you know, late Monday or late Sunday, you know, and sleep in the airport on one end or the other, or fly out Monday morning, go to the workshop, and then go back to the airport Tuesday night, and then stay there, or Monday night, sorry. Okay, let's start over. Fly out early Monday morning, go to the workshop, go back to the airport Monday night, stay in the airport Monday night, fly out early Tuesday. And that was kind of my plan for how to manage it. So, I mean, it's not a matter of, like, it's not a matter of saving $5,000 to do it. It's a matter of, like, well, I could save $1,200 and do this. So there you go. So we had our worst person on the flight last time. I've got two nominees this time, both from the same flight as well, although I have kind of a runner-up. So number one is a lady who gets on the plane extremely late with a baby and a small child. Now, here's the thing. Here's like one of the flaws of the Southwest. Everyone likes the Southwest, right? And it's like you board and then it just turns into Thunderdome. And you see people, everyone thinks they're so clever because they're sitting, you know, in one row, one on the window, one on the aisle. But I'm like, I see you talking to each other. I know you didn't just make friends in the airport, because that's, no one does that. So I know what you're trying to do is be like, someone's going to have to sit in the middle if they want to sit with us, and therefore they'll just pass us by. And you're like, God damn it. God damn it. But here's the flaw. Because I tried a different tactic the last couple times, which was sitting towards the back of the plane. Because I figured, like, you know, you don't know if the plane's going to be full. Like, it would be nice if you knew beforehand if they were like, listen, there's going to be, like, two empty seats on this plane. Because then I would probably just sit in a fucking middle seat in, like, the second row or whatever, right? I would just be like, well, that's what it is. I'm going to sit in the middle. No big deal. And then, you know, because the thing is, the good thing about sitting up front is, like, when you land, if you sit in the back of the plane, I mean, from the time you touch down till the time that you're walking is probably 20 to 30 minutes. It takes fucking forever. So, one of the flaws of the Southwest system is if you, like, you know, I saw empty seats in the back, so I was like, I'm just going to go to the fucking back, and I was like, here's a plus. No one's going to be sitting behind me and, like, banging into my chair the whole time. So that's something. And, like, if there's any, like, crying kids or whatever, they'll be in front of me. I feel like that's easier to ignore somehow. I don't know. So that was the plan. But then you get back there and there's a bunch of people bitching and moaning because they, like, aren't, there's no doubles, you know, there's no two seats next to each other. Which I'm like, okay, well, here's the thing. On Southwest, you can pay, like, an extra $15, and then you get to be pre-checked. You know, you get in the A boarding group, like, in the beginning boarding group, and you're guaranteed you'll get two seats together. I mean, it's pretty much guaranteed. If you don't do that, though, then you might get fucked and not be able to sit next to each other. Now, when Poon Master Flex and I fly, like, one time that happened. We were really late as far as getting our seat or our boarding assignment, and we flew in different rows, and it was fine. Like, we're fine. It's 2.5 hours, and it's not a big deal. You know what I mean? It's like, eh, someone gets on the plane, we're both on the plane, it's like, all right, I'll see you in a couple hours. I mean, we were about to or had just spent several days together, and it was like, I think we'll be okay. I mean, prefer to sit next to each other, but it's not a big deal. But the problem is, the flaw in the Southwest thing is that the people who get on the plane, I mean, they're grumbling about it, but it kind of becomes your problem as another passenger, because it's like, are you willing to, you know, see this person's plight and switch seats? Which is what happened, because this older couple gets on, and the guy is like, ugh, you know, I guess we can't sit together, and they were like, in completely different rows, not, they couldn't even really see each other and whatever. And so this guy comes, sits next to me, and then other people are getting on the plane. Now, while this is happening, they make an announcement that there's a woman with a young child and a baby who is looking, you know, if someone would move so they could have two seats next door to each other. Now, Southwest, even though it's like a free-for-all when it comes to boarding, they do have a, like, hey, this is the time for people with young kids to board, so get on, you know? And why this person didn't avail themselves of that time, I do not know. Because it's like, listen, motherfucker. I wish that people didn't fly with babies. Like, I really do. Or, like, really super young kids. I mean, you know, they get to the other end and grandpa's there. And it's like, how come grandpa can't come fucking see you? Like, grandpa's probably retired. Grandpa doesn't have to travel with these kids. All grandpa has to do is get on the fucking airplane, do a goddamn crossword puzzle, and then he's there. And then, you know, whatever. But anyway, it's just like, I understand. People are going to fly with kids. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, there's no going back on that one. But I really wish people who flew with kids were, like, responsible about it. I mean, listen, I show up, I left my house, and I was through security 90 minutes after I left my house, which is pretty fucking good for Denver. You know, or, like, I left Poonmaster Flex's place, got on the train, and was through security at Portland, like, same time, hour and a half. And it's because, like, I have no checked luggage, I'm not bringing any crazy shit, you know, the only stuff I have with me, like, fits under the chair. I mean, it's super easy. And, you know, I know how to do the security. I take my clothes off, I get fucking naked, I spin my penis around in helicopter fashion as they request. And then they're like, and now from the side, they're like, front ways is your best view of your penis. And I'm like, I agree. Front ways flaccid, you know, not pointed at you. That's a little threatening, but front ways just dangling. Lost my train of thought, if you can believe it. So anyway, just fucking show up early. If you have a kid, show up early. And then you can sit next to them, and then it's not a problem, and then someone else doesn't have to move. Because here's the other thing. When you have to move, you're moving to a less preferential seat every time. It's not like you're getting moved to, like, oh, well, you're going to get moved to the front of the plane, or, like, oh, you're going to get moved to, you know. You're moving backwards and into a middle seat. Always. So it's like, fuck you, you know, for getting there on time. You know, you wasted your time getting there on time. I mean, like, I set an alarm. I get there on time, you know, whatever. I know how long it takes me to get to the airport. And there you go. But it's like, other people, it's discourteous is what it is. So anyway, she was number one because I was just like, what the fuck, man? Like, I know it's tough to travel with kids. I know it's bad. But it's like, you know, I think the thing you got to do is just fucking get there early. And this wasn't like an early morning flight. I think it was at like 8:30 p.m. So it's like, I don't know, man, you had a lot of time to get your shit together and get there. It just, that one I just didn't like. So she was like my first nominee. My second nominee was not the old couple who I switched the guy's wife. The guy was sitting there and he's like, ugh, you know, well, whatever. And I was like, once the dust settled and people were in their chairs and I was like, listen, I'll switch with your wife if she wants. And he was like, oh, yeah? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, you know. And he's like, can I buy you a drink? And I was like, no, I'm all right, because I don't drink a lot these days, as we discussed. And also, if I drink a beer on a plane, I'm going to have to take a piss on the plane or desperately pee when I get off the plane. I've been traveling with, like, a water bottle that's, like, 10 ounces or something. Because that way, I know that's, like, a good amount for me to drink on the way to the airport. And then, like, in the airport. And then on the plane, I can drink it, you know, and I'll be fine. But any more than that, and I'm taking a risk. So anyway, you know, I move over. And so, second nominee is the guy I was sitting next to on the aisle side. Now, he was enormous. And not fat, just like very big and broad-shouldered, right? Which I could kind of see before I went over, but was like, whatever. The asshole on the window side didn't make it much better. Like, when you're on the window side, by the way, you gotta like hug the wall a little bit. The wall is your new friend. When you have a window seat, you're the only seat that has somewhere to go. Because when you're on the aisle, you can't go out in the aisle. That shit's too thin, and when they bring that cart up or when people are walking by, everyone's just knocking into you. It's horrible. You have nowhere to go. Middle seat, obviously you have nowhere to go. And Poon Master Flex and I decided this, by the way. We both discussed and agreed. Middle seat, you know, you share armrests with people. Like, there's one armrest between each chair. Middle seat gets both. Okay? You get your one on the outside if you're in the aisle. You get your one on the, you know, you get your window side if you're on the window. And the person in the middle gets both because they get fucked. I think that was her terminology. I think she actually said they get fucked. And so they should get the armrests. And I was like, I agree with you and your use of the word fucked. Because, you know, that's not your typical. You're typical. So I'm glad to see you passionate about it. Because I'm also passionate about it. It's important to share passions together in a relationship. So I sit down next to this dude, and, you know, the other dude's not making a lot of space. I mean, he could have done better, right? So I sit down, and then I notice this guy has some tattoos. So he's got really dark skin, so I didn't notice that he had tattoos, really, until I got close to him. And then I could see his arms are covered in tattoos. And on the aisle side, you know, he's got, like, some tribal-looking shit and, like, a Hellraiser pinhead tattoo. And, you know, I was like, whatever. I mean, it's just stuff. On his right arm, which is next to me, he's got two different tattoos of fully naked women that aren't just naked. One of them is, like, do you know the Nicki Minaj album cover where she's, like, squatted down and showing her butt and all that? It's like that, but from the front, so, and totally naked. So it's like, her, not only is she naked, but she's like opening her vagina. And this is a tattoo that this person has. And there's a second one that's like equally, you know, pornographic. Now, I'm not a person who's like, I'm not real against tattoos of any variety, for the most part. I mean, I'm not a believer in, like, you know, I don't know, if someone has a neck tattoo, I'm like, whatever. I mean, tattoos don't mean anything anymore. As far as, like, the presence of a tattoo, I don't think is gonna keep you from getting a job anymore. I mean, here and there, but whatever. I mean, fuck those jobs anyway. However, I don't feel quite the same about a open vagina woman tattoo that also, by the way, looks like crap. I mean, it's not like a beautiful art piece. I mean, calling that art would be a stretch. It would be like calling, you know, the images that appear on helpfulsnowman.com art. And I'd be like, that's a stretch, but all right. So it was kind of fucked up, and I just thought, like, you know, and he's got short sleeves on, so you can see him. They would be covered if he had long sleeves on. And I just wonder, like, is this something you do when you get in a position in life where you're like, you know what? Like, everything's good, and I'm comfortable in my position in life, so I'm going to just do this thing I've always wanted to do? Or is this something you do? My guess is this is something you do when you're young. And then maybe later you're like, that wasn't so great. But I don't know, maybe it's hard to cover it up. Like, you don't want to admit that that was like a fucking really stupid decision. Or maybe all the like tribal shit on his other arm was covering up like even worse stuff. Like, it's just like a cock and someone's going down on it. And it's just like blowing the back of some lady's head out with sperm load or something. It's got to be something worse if you were covering it up and you were like, let's start on this side. Like, you wouldn't just start if there was nothing, if it was all innocuous on the left side and you're like, well, let's cover this up, you know, and then it'll match the other one when I actually cover the stuff I want to cover. So it was kind of fucked up, and I just thought it was weird. It was a very weird thing to have tattooed. Even for me, who's someone who's like, I don't know, like a topless mermaid, I'm like, that seems pretty, that's pretty traditional, right? That's not, that doesn't do anything for me, and it doesn't, like, shock me to the core or something like that. But just that kind of tattoo, I was like, oh, all right, like, I guess you just gave up. Third nominee. So I guess that guy, I'm just like, wanted to ask him about what the fuck he was thinking with these tattoos, or like when he got them, or basically like what's the deal, but also didn't want to, because that's like the worst thing to ask people. I think it's the worst thing to ask people, because like now if you ask people what their tattoos mean, it's either absolutely nothing, or like I like this thing, or it's like really meaningful to them. And then it's like still not a conversation starter with a stranger. Unless maybe you have a bunch of tattoos too. Then maybe it's like, oh yeah, you know, this is what I got. What do you got? But I can't speak from experience on that one. Finally, so on the way back, I sat next to this kid and I was watching a movie partway back. I was watching Creepshow. Just rated R and has zombies come in, and I could tell this kid was watching, and I was trying to tilt it away from him. I mean, there's really not a lot you can do to tilt it away from somebody, you know, but the most I could do was to tilt it away so that he had to crane if he wanted to, like, see what was going on, which he totally did. And then I was like, well, whatever, like, what can you do? It made me wonder about watching movies on the plane, like, yeah, what if I watch something like, I don't know, when I watch a movie, it doesn't occur to me to wonder, like, is this going to have, like, a weird sex scene in it? Like, I just watched something that had a sex scene in it that I was like, ooh, okay. Or, like, I just watched Bone Tomahawk, you know, and fucking dude, like, chopping another dude in half from his asshole up through his face. And you're like, oh, I didn't exactly know that was coming. So I don't know how his parents feel about that. Probably not good. But on the other hand, like, what am I supposed to do? I don't know that's happening. It's like, all right, well, for next time I've got It's a Mad, 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 Mad World queued up, so I'm guessing that'll be fine. But the parents did this move that I've seen people do at work before, at my work, which is like, okay, so the kids will be fucking around doing something, you know, being loud or whatever, and they'll be like, Steve, you got to stop being loud, because otherwise the librarian is going to get mad at you, or the librarian is going to yell at you, or the librarian's going to have to make you leave. Basically, they make you the scary, like, rule-oriented figure, which used to not bother me because I was like, whatever, but now I kind of feel like this is a move that parents do subconsciously because it relieves them of the sort of, they're not the bad guy, right? They're like, they're not saying, don't do this because it's a mean jerk thing to do. Or, you know, don't do this because you should be courteous to people. They're saying, don't do this because this individual is going to be mad at you. So I tried the back row again. Never again, by the way. I think that's the end of my back row attempts. And that's not a euphemism for, like, a sex thing. That is just, like, no more sitting in the back seat. Unless, you know, if Poon Master and I are flying together, maybe, because then they're two seats together, but whatever. And so, you know, there's a family, and it's like a kid and a dad and a kid and a mom. And the kid and the dad sit next to me, the kid and the other kid and the mom sit, you know, one row in front of us. So, like, we land, and I'm in the back row, so I'm just, like, I don't even move. I'm just sitting there, like, trying to, like, sort of mentally float away. And just so the time goes by, because I know it's going to be forever until we get off. And, like, I can't sit there and watch people, like, get their luggage and struggle with stuff and whatever, because I'm like, oh my god, this takes forever. So the kid in front of us turns around and the kid next to me, and they're kind of, like, you know, slap fighting, whatever, slapping hands and shit. And then the dad is like, hey, stop doing that. This poor guy, and he's talking about me, is crammed here in the corner, and he probably doesn't want your hands in his face, you know, doing that. Now, this is 100% accurate. I'm not going to claim any different. I'm not going to attack the veracity of that statement, because that is 100% true. I did not want that in my face. And I was trapped in the back. I was the poor man trapped in the back. Everything he said was true, except I was like, why are you making me the bad guy? Like, why are you making me the one who's like, because I'm just sitting there looking at my phone and was kind of like, I mean, this is annoying and I definitely would prefer it wasn't happening, but what are you going to do? You know, and also it's like when you get to the end of the flight and you just want to get the fuck off the plane. You just want to get the fuck off the plane. And you're kind of like, I don't know, I'm kind of at a low. That's like a low for me right then, is waiting on the plane to get off. So like, there's not a lot. You know, when a baby's crying then, when the baby's crying before you take off, you're like, oh shit. Because you're thinking, it's going to be 3 hours of this. But when a kid is like fucking around like that, waiting to get off the plane, you're like, it's going to be 10 more minutes and I'm never going to see this motherfucker again. And he'll probably grow up to have an unhappy life because just statistics. Just do the math. So I did. It was interesting because it seemed like what this dad had brought for the kid to do was like a games magazine. So crossword puzzles and shit, which the kid had no interest in. And the dad was kind of trying to ask him, like, you know, what was, I don't know, what was the guy, the fucking, you know, King Arthur's right-hand man, whoever that guy was. And it was like, what was the name of his horse? And I was like, I don't even fucking know that. And he's asking this kid, and this kid's like, I don't know. And the dad's like, you've never read King Arthur? And I was like, well, wouldn't you know that? Like, if he's read it, wouldn't it be because you read it to him? I mean, why would you know that? And also, why would you know the second banana's horse's name? I mean, the Lone Ranger's horse is Trigger, right? What's Tonto's horse's name? I have no fucking idea. I don't know. What's the name of the car that is driven on the Green Hornet? I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know if it has a name. I mean, you can know the name of the second banana. You know, Kit on Knight Rider, right, is probably the second banana and also a vehicle. So that's one I know because it's the same. It's one and the same. But how are you going to know, like, the car that's driven by the second banana? I mean, what kind of car did James Franco drive in that weed movie that I can't remember the name of? Pineapple Express. What did he call his car? And I'm like, who the fuck would know that and why? I mean, if you know that, A, you remember a lot of Pineapple Express. And B, I'm questioning whether that's the movie for you, because obviously you're not getting stoned all the time and fucking losing your memory and all. You must be in a pretty sober state when you must be taking in Pineapple Express as a serious endeavor. Which is fine. Whatever. But it seemed like the primary source of entertainment that this dad brought was snacks. Because it was like popcorn and then chips and then like a chocolate egg that broke, you know, like one of those Kinder eggs that has the prize inside and like whatever. And this kid was going apeshit on this, on the popcorn. Like they just sat down and then he starts eating popcorn. Like, and I was like, what the fuck? Why this right now? And then, you know, he was eating, it was like a full size bag of chips that he was going in and out of. And then the dad brings out this egg, and he's like, it's a chocolate egg with, like, a toy inside. And he's like, sorry, it broke in my bag. And the kid was like, yeah, it's pretty broken. Oh, well, you know, and was eating it. And I was kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's a chocolate egg that broke 2 minutes ago, not one that your dad had in his fucking pocket for, like, all day, and it melted into a wad. I think you'll be fine. I agree. I agree with both of you. It's, you know, it's not the same, but you'll be fine. And then we get on the ground, and, like, the second we get on the ground, the kid, like, gets up and runs to the bathroom because, like, the landing made him ill. And I was like, oh, and he also ate a sandwich. And I was like, well, maybe it's because he just, like, ate more food than an adult man Peter ate today in that 3-hour stretch. Like, I don't know, maybe that was a mistake. Maybe don't, like, bring as much food. It's not, maybe not turn it into, like, a contest of, like, how much can I eat in, you know, this amount of time. I mean, it was crazy. It just seemed like every time I turn around, every time I looked around, this kid's like pulling out another bag of something. And I was like, all right, whatever. So anyway, but I nominate that dad for making me the bad guy while I'm just sitting there quietly hugging the wall as Poon Master Flex and I have decided is appropriate. Okay? I do my best. And what happens? You get fucked anyway. It doesn't even matter. So So I don't know. I couldn't decide how I wanted to talk about the workshop, right? Because I didn't really want to say everything that happens in the workshop, because I feel like that's sort of violates the trust of the people who are in the workshop or something like that. Here's the thing. It's like the general style of it is it's like a 45-minute lecture, maybe, and then we go over two pieces, one from one person in the class and one from another person in the class. And they read it out loud, and then we all kind of give our comments on it. And that's how it goes. So a lot of the sort of lessons and things that come out of it come as a result of those pieces. So I struggle a little bit with, like, how to talk about the class without talking about those pieces, because, like, most of these pieces are things people worked on, but they're not done. You know what I mean? It's a little bit like... It would be like if I was showing you all the dirty dishes that came about on a, you know, a cooking show, and then you were like, well, that looks disgusting, right? That bowl's been sitting in the sink for 2 days, and it's crusty and whatever, and I'm like, yeah, see what I'm saying? But it's not the thing yet. It's not... That's not the thing that we're talking about, really. So, I thought, though, I could just share a little something from each one that's kind of apropos of nothing, but just something that I really thought was interesting or fun, or just strongly agreed with in this case, which is, in the workshop, Chuck was saying, you know, that basically it was one of Tom's rules not to put dreams in a story, which I agree with 100%. And you know, the basic logic there is like a dream can be anything, and so it doesn't really mean anything. And also, whatever you're trying to do in the dream, you should be trying to do, you know, in a conscious, meaningful way, as opposed to just sort of sneaking it in through dreams. And also, I mean, I think dreams have a range of experience. But I think it's rare for all of us to experience a dream that's, like, informative of something that is happening or will happen or did happen. You know, like, I've had lots of dreams that clearly are informed by that stuff. And clearly informed by, you know, how I'm feeling at a given time, right? Like, if I'm feeling a lot of anxiety or if I'm feeling this or that. But... And, you know, I think that having those dreams can be like, maybe I'm a little more stressed out than I thought. But I think that's about it. And if you think about it like this, if I were going to talk about, you know, if I was dreaming a lot, in the stories, I probably wouldn't say what I was dreaming about. It's more significant that I'm dreaming a lot when I typically don't. And then... I think people try and make the dreams seem very, like, they're either comical or they're too on the nose. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I had this dream. I was climbing a mountain and the air was getting thinner and thinner and I was getting more and more tired. And then I woke up and remembered I had to finish this really long paper for school. Right? And you're like, oh, okay. I see where you're going there. And Chuck said, you know, a dream can be anything. It could just be a snake going into a hole, rolling a donut. And I was like, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Just like, I mean, if you had that dream, you'd wake up and be like, I had the weirdest, most vivid dream. But then what? I mean, so what? If you've had a crazy dream, I promise that whoever you're telling that dream to has had a crazier dream. And it's like, dreams turn into this contest. It's one of the few things where I feel like people never are going to say, oh, tell me more. They're going to say, I had a dream once that was kind of like that, but it was like this. And you just kind of realize you're going back and forth talking about the craziest shit that your mind has made up, or in my case, very mundane. I mean, I had recurring dreams a lot about work where I was like shelving books. And I was halfway through the workday and realized I hadn't put on regular pants. I was wearing pajama pants and was like, oh my God, can people see the outline of my dick? And like, what's going on? And like, I can't be wearing these at work. I need to get out of here. And I'd be like, ugh, can I make it through till lunch? It's 45 minutes till lunch, you know. And it was a stupid dream, and I think, you know, if I wanted to go into it, I could be like, well, it seems like you're just really focused on work a lot. You know what I mean? Work is becoming your life, and maybe you should create a better separation between work and life. And that's a pretty easy interpretation, especially because I'm like, yeah, I mean, everything about that rings true. Everything about what I just said is 100% true. But who cares? Like, who gives a shit? I mean, there's a better way to show that if you are doing a story, right? There's a better way to show, oh, I'm overworked. You know what I mean? Your poops turn from solid to liquid. And then you're like, I'm stressed out. That's a much more visceral way to show that somebody's overworked than to have them have a sort of convenient dream that comes at the right time when you need it in the story. That's the other thing, is I think these dreams in real life don't often come at, you know, if I'm stressed out at work and I don't know what I'm so stressed out about, I probably won't have that work stress dream as a direct response to, like, you know, today I was thinking a lot about why I'm stressed out, and then I dreamed about work and thought, oh, that's probably it. Like, it's just very convenient. And so if that's what you wanted to do, I guess it's just sort of like, if you want to do dreams, I think you just got to do, you better do something special with them. Like, you better be doing something with a dream that hasn't really been done, or that is super interesting, or, you know, exposes some side of dreaming that is not felt. I mean, that's not normally expressed or whatever. I'm just saying, it's kind of like if you're going to write a story about a vampire, in my mind, it's like, I mean, my first thing would be like, don't. But my second thing would be like, if you insist, it better be real fucking special. Like, you better make it something so special as to, you know, as to turn it into something that I want to read, that I have some other reason to read, other than it just sort of being a one-line premise of, you know, vampires are this. You know, like, the last vampire book I can remember being interested in, one came out, and it was basically about a vampire who wakes up in modern times and discovers that vampires are all these, like, hot club kids. And he's, like, the classic sort of Nosferatu vampire. He's ugly and shit and mean. And, you know, not trying to, I don't know, sleep with some girl without infecting her purity and shit. And so he kind of is like, this is bullshit, and tries to make vampires be ugly and mean and shitty again. And I'm like, all right, well, at least that's something. I mean, it's kind of a response to something, so it's not entirely crazily different, but at least it's something. Like, I could see why someone would write that. There's a purpose to it. So anyway, that's like a big thing I totally agree with and totally feel, which is dreams, fuck it. I mean, if you wanted to put a dream in your story, or you're thinking about putting a dream in your story, think about, is there any other possible way I could do it? And if you do have a dream in your story, I'll make an exception here. I think it's okay, but you gotta make it fucking quick. You gotta make it very clear that I'm dreaming somehow. And you got to, don't have the dream doing, like, any of the work in the story. You know, like, sometimes you'll read a story, or they do this on TV a lot, like a sitcom. They'll have a dialogue between two characters where the dialogue's giving you all the information. The dialogue is telling you, like, oh, okay, so these characters knew each other from high school. Oh, Steve! Yeah, remember? It's me, Eric, from high school. Oh, yeah, class of 82. You know, and you're like, why would you be saying all these things out loud? I mean, the only reason you would say those out loud is because that's how we've heard people talk on TV, right? Which is kind of a fascinating thing that, like, I think we've all seen so much TV that sometimes we think that dialogue between people sounds like it does on TV, which it totally does not. I mean, so when you have dialogue doing heavy work, it's kind of, I think it's sort of bad. And then I think having dreams do any sort of work is also really bad. And if it's not doing work for you, what's it doing? Yeah, I read this. There was this Chuck Klosterman essay where he was talking about some book that was written back in the day, where this guy was kind of talking about why TV wasn't such a great thing, and like the, you know, the prevalence and the sort of overarching TV being everywhere. And this guy did this experiment where he polled a bunch of people, right? Which also sounds like innuendo. I polled a bunch of people, and they gave me low scores. They didn't appreciate it. He polled a bunch of people, and he asked them these questions, and, you know, the questions kind of went like, okay, I want you to picture a basketball game. Like, imagine you're watching a basketball game. And then, you know, he would say, now when you were picturing the basketball game, you know, he'll give them like 30 seconds or something, just, you know, between any two teams, it doesn't matter, like, whatever. When he asked people then about the games they pictured, every respondent pictured the game as if they were viewing it on TV. So, like, different camera angles, the different cuts, the things. And he was like, not one person, when I said picture a basketball game, pictured it as being at the game or actually playing a basketball game. You know, he's just saying, imagine a basketball game. And nobody imagines it as, like, playing basketball in a driveway. No one imagines it as playing basketball in a park. They all imagine it as seen on TV. Which I thought was super interesting, right? Because it's like, yeah, I mean, we've all played basketball on some level. We've all been on a basketball court before. We've all seen basketball played by, like, middle schoolers and shit. We've all sat in the bleachers and seen basketball on some point in some way. You know, we've all seen Chuck E. Cheese pop a shot where the hoop moves back and forth, right? We've all seen all these versions of basketball, but everyone who responded in this thing was picturing basketball as seen on TV. So it was weird. This guy was kind of saying that, like, TV isn't just showing us the world like Aladdin. It's, like, altering how we see the world. So pretty fascinating. And I do think that's happened with dialogue. Like, sometimes I think that people see that kind of dialogue as realistic, which I would encourage you to listen to dialogue or even, like, transcribe actual dialogue between two people. Because you'll find out, like, unless they're having a discussion, you know, like a Lincoln-Douglas debate, usually the people don't really listen to each other. They don't ask direct questions, and they don't answer questions directly. I mean, it's not, dialogue is usually not productive the way that, I think in stories, dialogue is always productive. It's always like, well, we just happened to talk about whatever we were talking about. You know, whatever the story is about, whatever the theme of this story was, we talked about that, and it was like question answer, you know. They remembered what they said in class, and it was this, and lo and behold, that came to be important. That kind of thing. Anyway, that was a much longer version of that, just kind of started from a snake going into a hole rolling a donut. So there you go. That's my workshop. That's what I flew out for. A snake rolling a hole and going into a donut. Or going into a hole rolling a donut. Excuse me. I don't want to mislead anybody. Ugh. I'm so close. But this time, I packed my gym clothes and I'm skipping the house and going straight to the gymnasium before I go home. Because I think that's the only way that I'll exercise. I have to, like, carefully plan exercise because, you know, I'm going to spend so much time sitting now. I'm going to spend 5 hours a day, twice a week, just sitting. And so I need to, like, get up and move a little bit more if I can. So that's part of the plan. I don't know if I talked about what my work is going to be like, or what my life Because basically, my work week starts on Wednesday. And I'll work 10-hour days Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then on Sunday or Monday, I'll fly out for the workshop. On Tuesday, I will fly back. Rinse and repeat. And there are a couple snafus in there, here and there. Like, I gotta go, you know, I have a work weekend still. So I gotta go on a Sunday, here and there. So it's not clockwork. Also, there's some weeks where I'm, like, not flying out till Monday just because of flights. If I'm careful, I can get the flight round trip for, like, $100. But, you know, that doesn't allow for Pete to be real choosy about his options. So that's kind of what my work week is looking like, which is going to be weird. Actually, the part that seems the weirdest, I don't mind, which is the every Saturday. So, I mean, that's, you know, ends up being like 12 Saturdays or something. But you cut out last Saturday, you cut out the Saturday before. I think there's one other Saturday in there I don't necessarily have to work. I was going to have to work two of those anyway, or three, because that's just my normal thing. So it's 3 to 12, but then it's 3 to 10, and then, you know, 3 to 9. So, I mean, it's three times as many Saturdays, but Saturdays aren't terrible. I mean, they can be. It just seems, it's like a real roll of the dice kind of day. On a regular day, you can kind of anticipate a certain amount of this and a certain amount of that. On Saturday, it's kind of like, well, I might have really no calls to do anything particular on the floor that day. Or we might be like super short-staffed and someone might come in and be like, I have this computer that's still in the box and would like to be shown how to use it. It would blow your mind how many people come in with something that was purchased for them or that they purchased, and it's still in the original packaging when they show up. And that's always a bad sign as far as, like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get you up to speed in about an hour or a half hour. You know, between 30 and 60 minutes might not be enough time for me to teach you general computing. I don't want to alarm anybody. Ah, oh, fucking A. There's a cop in the median up here, so, like, the traffic is backed the shit up. It's so amazing how, you know, just somebody being, like, just a police car being there fucks up the traffic for, like, a half mile. You'll be on the highway, and you're just sitting there, and it's slow as shit. And then you get up there and you're like, okay, so a cop pulled somebody over. Like, what are we all doing? What are we all looking at? There's nothing to look at. Also, nothing worse than when, like, everyone's getting over and there's that one asshole who takes, like, forever to get over. And I'm always, like, pretty good. Like, if I have to get over, I try and get over early. You know, because I feel like, how are you going to know? You don't know until it's too late. But then I let, like, one person in, and I'm like, all right, if everybody let one person in. But if someone's not trying to get over until way too late, or you leave them a huge gap and they're not even making an attempt, I'm like, fuck off. Come on. Get it together. Pay attention. I don't know what you were doing up until now that you thought you didn't have to get over, but you were wrong. All right. All right. It's just a cop. Just a cop car, just sitting there with its lights on. Oh, and there's a car in the median. Okay, big deal. Like, we're going slow as shit. I mean, can't people use their peripheral vision? I went to the eye doctor, and he tested my peripheral vision, which he said was perfect. So maybe this is, like, one of the few good features that my body possesses, is good peripheral vision. So I don't understand why people have to, like, swivel their head and observe something, because I'm like, I can just see it without even trying. We went to a cat cafe while I was out there. I got Poon Master Flex a gift card because you pay to go into this one and you, like, get a certain time slot and shit. And it's like a cafe. They figured out the situation. They have the cafe as one side, and the cat area is the other side. So they're like sealed off from each other. And so you like, well, we're waiting to go in because it's like you go in for an hour and then your time is up. So we're watching the people in there the hour before us because it's full and we're waiting to go because at 5, I think, is when we went. At 5 on, you know, certain days, it's like no kids. It's adults only. Not because it's sexy, just because like, well, because we've been to another cat cafe and it's really a fucking horrible place to be when like kids are there. Because like, I get why people bring kids there because it's fun. But kids and cats do not mix. You want to do that, you got to have a dog cafe. That's what you want. Because, like, the dogs want to play, the dogs want to do this. Sometimes the cats want to play. But, like, a cat, I'm not, like, an expert cat dad here. But something I know about cats is, like, hey, you get out the feather, and if they want to play with the feather, they will come over and play with the feather. If they don't want to play with the feather, then you just put the feather away and say, all right, another time. What you don't do is, like, drag it along their body and like put it in their face and do all this shit, right? Because it's like that's not how cats work. I mean, it's just not. They don't. I'm always talking about these etiquette rules for like the highway or the airline or whatever, but like this is just doesn't work for cats. And kids like want to play with the cats, obviously, because it's fun and everyone wants to play with the cats. And it seems like adults are the only ones, and not even most adults, but some adults are capable of like, hey, if the cats don't want to play, whatever, we'll just be in the same room. This cat wants to nap, but will let me pet it. That's fine. I can live with that. That's just as good. So we go and, you know, we go to the adult time, but then about halfway through, this family came in with a kid and it was just like, this kid was like running around and he had this laser pointer and he was like, trying to like shine it in this cat's face while it was sleeping. And it was sleeping on this little cardboard couch under a bench. And Poonmaster Flex was like petting this cat. You know, they were getting along famously. And as she said, she's like, it's a good thing these cats are all being adopted. Cause, you know. And I was like, yes, it is. Cause when we got there, she was like, okay, no bringing home a kitty. And I was like, all right. She's like, I'm serious. Like, enforce it if you have to. And I was like, all right. She was making her, like, sober decision. You know, this was, like, this is the cat lady version of signing the do not resuscitate. And then she's like, I'm making you my power of attorney. You know, so if I go down, you don't let them do shit. You don't give, you know, don't put me on, don't Terry Schiavo me. I'm like, all right, I will take this sacred duty seriously. So she's, like, petting this cat, and it's fine. Like, the cat's sleeping. It would, like, get up and, you know, move around a little bit and then let her pet it some more and so on. And this kid's, like, shining a laser in its face, and then it's sleeping on this little cardboard love seat thing that's, like, under a bench. And so when the kid was like, what do you think this kid will do with the laser? And Cassie's, or this cat will do with the laser? And Cassie's like, oh, I think she's just sleeping right now, so probably not much. And the kid's, like, shining the laser in its face and stuff. And then he's like, maybe if we pull it out. And I'm not kidding, like, starts grabbing this cardboard couch and is, like, pulling it out into the open from under this bench. And it's like, and Cassie was like, no, I think we should just let it rest if it wants to. You know, if it wants to be there, that's what we should just let it do. And I was like, yeah, I think so, too. And I'm just, here's what's annoying to me is it's not even the kids so much because it's like, I get it. Like, when you're a kid, you don't fucking know. And when you go to the cat cafe, like, when you're a kid, you probably don't really understand that, like, the cat cafe is not really for you, the attendee. It's for the cats to get them adopted, right? And so it's not like when you go to Six Flags and the rides aren't working. It's like when you go to the zoo and the animals aren't awake. You don't just, like, fucking scream at them and wake them up. You're just like, well, you know, the gorillas are asleep. And whatever. But there's always those assholes who, like, just let their kids scream at them or scream at them themselves. And I'm just like, man, parents, like, come on. Come on. I guess I have high expectations or demands of parents. I basically demand that they be all over their kids all the time. But I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. If you guys are all over your kids all the time, like, you can't You can't let him walk two blocks home. You got to have him signed up for all this shit all the time. How about you, like, make them behave? I don't know. Or, like, I just... This is, like, getting into crazy swirling territory. I just think that, like, we need to... I'd like to see a return to the days when there were some things that were, like, for kids and families, and some things not so much. Because I'm like, I think Cat Cafe, maybe not so much. Or, like, you know, hey, Cat Cafe is for kids on fucking, you know, Sundays. On Sundays, it's for kids. On this day, it's whatever. Because it's a crazy idea. And some of the cats there, too, like, one of the cats was real pissy, and then we got some snacks and treats, and so, you know, and then we hung out with that cat a little, and then he let us pet him a little, and let us give him treats and stuff, and was really sweet, but then reverted back and was like, no, leave me the fuck alone. And I was just like, you know, this is not, like, a good environment for this cat. I think this cat would probably be fine if it was home and it had its own territory and didn't have, like, a bunch of people in its face all the time. But it was, like, a big-ass cat, and I was like, I don't think this cat is used to taking shit off of people and is not... That's just not this cat's way. So I felt sort of bad because I was like, this cat's never going to get adopted here because it's being an asshole, but it's being an asshole... Because this is not a good environment for him. It's like, what are you going to do? I don't know. Put him to work, I guess. I guess he needs to make lattes or something. There you go. All right. That's it. That's more than it. That's a bunch of stuff plus some extra stuff. Thanks for listening. Oh, we're so close to an hour. I got to end it before an hour just to be a tease. Okay, bye.